heute Morgen Karin Kirsch vom Kanadorf Lützebüsch begrüßen an den Dr. Michael Ungar. Guten Morgen, good morning.
Good morning.
Die Sitze bei uns kommen, das nämlich die erste internationale Konferenz über Traumapädagogik von Haut bis den 19. Oktober zu Lützebüsch. Karin Kirsch, was war der ausschlaggebende Punkt für die Konferenz zu organisieren? Erstens, dafür war zu Lützebüsch?
Ja, also die, das ist das mal die Idee gekommen, weil wir evaluiert haben, wir feiern Lauf auf das Jahr, das Jahr von SOS Kanadorf hier zu Lützebüsch. Und was machen wir, wat, wie können wir bei so aufmerksam machen, aber auch wie können wir Themen, die die uns beschäftigen und die mir wichtig fanden, auch vielleicht ohne größere Publik rundruhen. Das war die Überlegung, die ja l'origine von der Idee war, ja dann organisieren wir gerne eine Konferenz, auch für Fachpublikum, aber nicht nur für Fachpublikum, auch für alle interessierte Leute am Anfang. Das Thema, was uns natürlich interessiert, als Trauma, weil Kanada Lützebüsch hält Kanada ab, die aus schwierigen Lebenssituationen kommen, die ganz oft ganz schwer Lebensbedingungen schon haben zu schon, traumatische Erlebnisse haben zu schon. Und natürlich ist das eine Frage, die uns in unserem beruflichen Alltag beschäftigt, wie können wir denen Kanada am besten helfen. Mhm. Und das ist die große Frage von der Traumapädagogik. Am Gegensatz zu der Traumatherapie, die ein ganz anderes Setting hat, Pädagogik sich wirklich mit der Frage, wie kann ich an einer Funktion, wo ich damit beobachtet bin, kann er an irgendeiner Form eine Leitung oder eine Begleitung zu gehen an ihrem Leben, wie kann ich sie da am besten dabei unterstützen, das gut machen, für dass sie auch auf dem Weg lernen, dann mit den schwierigen Erlebnissen, die sie hatten, eins zu gehen.
Mhm. Wir hatten im Viergespräch ein bisschen darüber geredet, dass den Term Traumapädagogik am Anfang aus dem Deutschen fällt könnte. Ja. Das existiert aber, das, was Traumapädagogik heißt, existiert ja auch in vielen anderen anderssprachigen Ländern. Das heißt, die hat sich nicht begrenzt, ob Deutsch Speaker auch für das Konferenzen.
Nee, absolut nicht. Wir haben den Michael Ungar, der kommt aus Kanada und befestigt sind da ganz lange mit dem Thema Resilienz. Mhm. Wir haben den Ellert Neuenhaus, den aus Holland kommt und er war auch ganz viel in Amerika tätig. Die Amerikaner haben auch ganz viel auf dem Gebiet schon geschafft. Und dann haben wir auch den Michel Silvestre, den aus Frankreich bei uns kommt, den mehr im Bereich EMDR, NRW, als systemisch. Das ist Eye-Movement, das ist eine Form von Therapie, die...
EMDR.
Is, what's the shortcut for? Do you know it?
You're talking about Eye-Movement.
Eye-Movement.
Desensitization. I forget what the R is. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to think about it.
Okay, das ist relativ technisch. Mehr.
Ja, also das ist eine bestimmte Therapietechnik, die dabei hilft, Menschen, die Trauma erlebt haben, der Trauma zu verschaffen. Mhm. Das ist aber eine ganz bestimmte Methodik, die ihn da lehrt. Das ist aber nicht das, wohin werden Donnerstag drüber schwätzen, sondern Donnerstag hält ein Referat zum Thema transgenerationellen Trauma. Das ist am Anfang die Frage, wie wirkt sich Trauma über, an einer Familie über Generationen aus. Hier nur durch systemischen Hintergrund, das ist systemische Therapie, befasst sich ganz viel mit so Frage von, also nicht nur in der gegenwärtigen Generation von Kanada von Eltern, eben auch Großeltern und Großeltern an, wie Themen an einer Familie von über verschiedene Generationen weitergedroht gehen an eben auch traumatische Themen können über Generationen durch einen Abfluss haben. Das ist ganz interessant.
Mhm. Die hat für dich schon noch geschaut, dass vor allem Kanada natürlich, die an Kanada dürfen betreut gehen, durch den Ausstoß gehen und weil die Menschen aus einer schweren Situation schon rauskommen und dementsprechend traumatisiert sind. Ja. Für wen Leute ist es noch interessant? Wen schwätzt da besonders un mit dieser Konferenz? Respektive, wen hat sich auch du vielleicht auch gemeldet, für dabei zu sein?
Also wir haben ganz viele Ummeldungen von Menschen, die im sozialen Bereich tätig sind, natürlich an erster Linie Erzieher, die wirklich um Terrain am Alltag mit traumatisierten Kindern und Jugendlichen arbeiten. Und noch Assistants sociaux, Leute vom SCAS, die sich zum Beispiel auch gemeldet haben. Wir haben Ummeldungen auch von Psychologen und von Doktoren gekriegt. Wir hatten davor auch gerichtet an Pflegeeltern, an hun Adoptiveltern, weil auch do der Thema Trauma oft präsent ist. Und gerade am Fall von Pflegeeltern, die auch kein professionell pädagogische Ausbildung haben, stellen wir oft fest, weil es kann auch auch Begleitung von Pflegeeltern machen, stellen wir oft fest, dass das für Pflegeeltern extrem schwierige Situationen können sein, die da entstehen. Ich weiß aber noch nicht, ob sich Pflegeeltern noch gemeldet haben, weil ich nicht alle so genau von Anmeldungen am Kapo. Aber das ist auf jeden Fall das Publikum, das sich doch verricht.
Eine andere Frage ist die, wenn dir von Trauma schwätzt, auch bei dem Kanadorf, gibt es eine spezifische Definition, von wem und ein Trauma besteht?
Oh, darüber streiten sich wirklich Geschichte. Das ist ganz schwer, weil auch die Frage, ob die dann mal gelungen wird, die eine gute Antwort können geben, das ist auch die Frage von der Widerstandsfähigkeit, also der Fähigkeit, die in hat, Trauma zu verschaffen. Und das ist eigentlich ganz interessant, weil es tut in halt so Situationen, wo Menschen quasi identische Situationen, die traumatisch, die potenziell traumatisch sind, so ein mal erleben. An den einen geht da nur relativ unbeschädigt leben, während dem den anderen ganz klar posttraumatische Symptome entwickelt. Und das ist ein ganz großes Gebiet von der Forschung, für zu gucken, herauszufinden, was möchte den Unterschied? Was möchte, dass den Menschen mit einer Situation relativ gut fährt? Was sind da unterstützende Faktoren? Und was möchte, dass ein anderer Mensch mehr Schwierigkeiten hat? Und die eng froh, mit der wir uns eben an der Konferenz befassen, dass wie können wir die Menschen unterstützen, die eben posttraumatische Folgestörungen haben, die Symptome weisen, können wir mal für den zu helfen. Und dann eben auch, wie kann ihn die Resilienz stärken, also die Widerstandsfähigkeit, was kann ihn da machen? Und da geht dann Michael Ungar dann an seiner Konferenz in Dünsten drüber.
That's a word that implies Dr. Michael Ungar. Resilience is your theme, so you're the founder and director of the Resilience Research Center. How did you come to this theme of resilience? Because it's not that old in psychology and in research.
No, it isn't. It's only been around in popular discourse or conversations for maybe 30 to 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I actually came to it as I was working with a lot of children who were badly traumatized, very badly abused, with severe mental health problems. And yet I was noticing in my clinical work that a lot of these children were doing better than expected. And that began me on a journey to sort of try and understand why some children appeared to be able to beat the odds, to do better than we might expect. And what at the time, the science was quite simple. There was a set of simple ideas about what could explain these children's behaviors. We now know that there's a lot more to it in terms of the kind of trauma that someone experiences, the duration or how long you're exposed to the trauma, whether that trauma is complicated, meaning is it just something that affects you as an individual or does it affect your whole family and community? Mm-hmm. And as you look at all those factors, what we have begun to understand is that there are a set of things that can actually reduce the impact. So whether you're a refugee who's running from war, or a child that has experienced physical or sexual violence, or maybe just a child who's being bullied at school, that even at each of those different levels, you can see a set of factors which we as communities, as educators, as parents, as caregivers, can give children that in a sense put up a nice little buffer between the trauma, the experiences, and how that trauma lands in their minds and in their bodies so that they can actually still function. And a lot of that science is actually being done with the children themselves who have survived. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones who are the best teachers.
Okay. So I've been asking before, how would you define, quite shortly, I know researchers don't like to do that much, but how would you define a trauma? What is the moment when you say, okay, that child or that person is traumatized? It's very different for everyone.
Yes. So what we actually talk about is, if I can add the word, potentially traumatizing events. Okay. So you think about as you're exposed to something that is disruptive or atypical, not normal in your life. And it leaves it causes literally at a body level, at a mind level, at a neurological level, a change in functioning. It shocks you. It's a disturbance. And the trauma, in a sense, is whether or not that creates a set of behaviors afterwards. Does it linger in you? Does it change the way you function, the way you think? So the moments you hear a loud noise, you're triggered to have a reaction. But I say potentially traumatizing because, of course, many people go through things and they are quite well adapted, or they don't experience it as trauma, as creating trauma. So trauma is about partly your perception of the bad thing and how it sort of affects you inside. And of course, there's a lot of differences in how that all plays out.
Okay, so you're going to talk about resilience too, and that is the possibility to stand over something that we lived through that might be very heavy, relying on us. And would you say that each person, each human being has kind of natural power of resilience in itself?
Mm. That's a great, great question. The whole idea of that, are we resilient inside of us? And the answer is sort of yes, but... there are definitely characteristics inside of us that where some individuals have, whether it's at a genetic level or the way our brains work, they seem to show more of a resistance to trauma. But when you actually look at the research, most of what makes us resistant to trauma is in fact outside of us. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if you have a well-functioning society, safe streets, a not a corrupt, you know, a safe police force, a good government, whatever that government is, if you have a school, if you have a caregiver, if you have an educator, that all these things are in place, even if you experience something very bad, the chances of that becoming a long and lingering form of mental illness in your life, trauma, is unlikely because there are so many supports around you. So I like to, in my work, shift the focus from just this idea that somehow it's all about internal grit, that capacity to overcome, that individual strength. And what I like to say is so much of that comes, that individual strength depends on whether or not others around us give us what we need to be strong.
Mm-hmm. We could listen to that music now that I chose for this theme. What the world needs now is love. So I think love might be one of the...
That would fit great.
Exactly. And talk again later on.
Enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just to live on. But the world
What the world needs now is love. Es sind 7 Minuten bis 10:30 dann wieder bei mir am Studio sind auch immer Karin Kirsch vom Kannerdorf an mir schwätzen über Traumapädagogik durch den Dr. Michael Ungare, den extra aus Kanada rufkommt für eine Konferenz zu halten. You're gonna have a speech in this week. So what will be the topic you're talking about?
So I'll be focusing at the invitation of SOS, I'll be focusing on this notion of resilience, or how do children cope when they've come out of dangerous or difficult or abusive environments? Mm-hmm. But what are actually the things that we as educators and parents and caregivers, what can we actually do to structure or give them parts of their environment that will make it possible for them to do better in life? And those kinds of things I talk about, of course, are love and attachments to a caregiver. That's obvious. But a lot of other things, too. It's about an extended network of social relationships. So teachers, bus drivers, community people, coaches. It's also about having structure and routines in your life. It's about having a positive identity, which is given to us, not necessarily something that we create. And of course, it's also about things like fair treatment, social justice, feeling valued, responsibilities, having your rights respected. When you put all of that package together, what we actually know from the science on this is that children who have been abused can actually withstand that stress and tend to recover much quicker from those negative experiences. So it's a little bit about what we can do to create really resource-rich environments around children. And this is as much about us as parents. I mean, if you're listening to this and you have a child, you know, that notion that child will be more resilient depending on how you engage with the child after, say, they come home and say, oh, you know, someone's bullying me on the playground. Mm-hmm. Well, how we respond, whether or not we label that experience as, you know, well, this is an opportunity for you to learn some new skills. Or if we say, oh, I will, okay, it's okay. You know, you're very vulnerable. You can't deal with that. I'm going to fix it for you. Two very different messages. One creates a more vulnerable, anxious child, potentially, and the other, I'm in a very simplistic way, mm-hmm. perhaps propels the child to having the resources later in life to deal with a lousy boss, maybe a difficult spouse. So there's a little bit of a payoff later on in life for some of these skills we help our children learn.
What if the parents never learned themselves to be resilient?
This is actually often, we work with a lot of families where the parents have been badly traumatized.
But each of the caretakers.
Indeed, all the caregivers, the caretakers have been badly traumatized. And then the child is being raised in a situation where there aren't a lot of these resources. And that is, in fact, very difficult. Because the child is not understanding or being given the skills that they need. And in a sense, that's the challenge. There are programs, there are trauma-informed interventions which give children, whether it's self-regulation skills, to, you know, that sort of get ahead of your bad thinking, you know, control your mind so you don't become explosive. But there's also other interventions that just teach children how to have the social skills necessary to talk to people, to reach out for help when they need it. If in most families, you think children shouldn't, I mean, do you have to teach children these things? Mm-hmm. But if a family has been very badly traumatized and the parents are themselves not coping well, or the caregivers are not coping well, the children will not learn these skills. And then that will show up. They won't be good at job interviews. They won't be able to go attend higher education. And in a sense, it's a cascade, a domino effect of one bad thing in their lives leading to another.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that resilience should be taught as such in schools?
I have colleagues here in Europe, out of a variety of initiatives across Europe right now that are doing exactly Dr. Carmel Safe in Malta leads an initiative that's across the region, the continent. And I think that you can teach some of these skills to children, but it also means changing the environments around children. Mm-hmm. So a good school is not just one that teaches children to be more resilient. It also is one that creates a safe playground, less bullying, a socially just environment that doesn't allow children to be racially marginalized or pushed aside, that the curriculum is diverse in terms of who is, you know, the pictures in the picture books, that type mm-hmm. of thing. When you create all of those things, then you're creating that wall, that buffer between a child feeling potentially stigmatized, pushed aside, and actually an inclusive environment where the child feels good to come in. And even if there is past trauma or past problems, that child will use that environment to stabilize, to calm, and to feel connected and trusting again, that ultimately is what's healing to the past.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the impression that for the last years, as long as you've been researching in this field, there are much more children showing signs of traumatism? Or is that stable?
We're definitely better at identifying trauma. So what used to be just labeled as, say, conduct disorder, which is kind of the mental health term for bad behavior, outrageous behavior of children. What we're understanding now is that many of those children are acting out from trauma, and it changes how you see the child. So if you're looking at a child who's throwing things and angry and having outbursts in the classroom and temper tantrums, and your tendency is to go, oh my God, this is a bad child, or blame the parents or whatever. And now we often understand that child is actually emotionally expressing a trigger, a neurological pathway that they've developed as being just simply overwhelmed by past experiences. And the treatment completely changes. So rather than getting angry or upset, what you realize you have to do is you have to create security and structure and predictability around that child. You have to engage that child and ensure them that they're not under threat. So you come in there with a big, loud voice or a punishment or something, that child is going to trigger further, mm-hmm. going to get worse. If you come in with a different approach, understanding that underneath that behavior is trauma, and you tend to approach it with a lot more empathy. And therefore, I think the child responds to that and is much more likely, not immediately, by the way, this is not a magic mm-hmm. pill, but slowly over time, that child will tend to learn that they can trust the world, that they can self-regulate, and that they can rely on others to help them. And they will calm those behaviors or choose more, socially desirable behaviors when they are upset or needing or feeling unsafe indeed.
So it's about creating confidence again?
Confidence, trust, attachments. But I like the way you just said that, because you're saying it's about creating. Mm-hmm. And that changes us from just saying to the child, oh, you have to be more confident. No, we're saying we're going to create a world that gives you mm-hmm. opportunities to feel confident. So that could be on the sports field. So you take a child like that, that maybe they're good at kicking a football, a soccer ball. You put them into a situation where they are able to compete with their peers and able to be successful. You don't overwhelm them with competition and that type of thing. And you manage that child into a place where they are beginning to feel like the world is a more trusted and a place where they can succeed.
Okay. You came to Luxembourg, so you're going to meet other speakers of the conferences. What is the theme that interests you most in what you might be hearing with colleagues?
What I'm always intrigued by learning is how do you apply these ideas in different cultures and contexts? I'm in Canada, of course. I get to travel the world. My research is in places like South Africa and China and Colombia. And what I'm always intrigued by and why I was so excited to come here is because SOS has a great reputation, but I'm also interested to see how they have been modifying their programs over the years, really diversifying their programming. So it's a series of different kinds of interventions with different profiles of children with neurocognitive challenges, behavioral challenges. I mean, this is a comprehensive suite of programs. And I guess for me, that's largely what I'm hoping to learn.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have a workshop, one or two, I'm not very sure. What are you going to show or what are you going to teach?
Essentially, I'm going to switch the conversation from, why are kids traumatized? That is, I'll let other people do that work. Mm-hmm. And I'll be talking more specifically about the common factors that we see that prevent that trauma from becoming a major problem in children's lives. So some of them I just mentioned, things like a positive identity and strong connections and feeling treated fairly and belonging. But of course, the nuance of that is when you're actually a psychologist or educator, a caregiver, you have to put those ideas into practice. Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets a little more complicated because you need to match your intervention to the kind of experiences and needs of the child specifically. So one child needs a very firm, structured expectations. That same strategy could backfire with another child depending on what their experience has been in the past. So it's a dance. I like to think of it as a dance in which you're never quite sure if the child is leading or you're the leader. But the end result is that when we get it right, it's quite magical to watch, and children tend to heal very quickly. So that's what I want to bring. I will bring lots of case examples. I speak through a lot of sort of experiences. I like to share video and examples so that people don't just hear me talking about the theories, but they'll actually see what I mean in practice.
Could you give us one example, the ones that you've been mentioning now?
Sure. Like, for instance, one of the examples I like to give is of a six-year-old girl who was stealing. Mm-hmm. And she was stealing to because she was being kind of badly neglected. She wasn't able to make friends. She was being bullied. And her solution to that, and this was a six-year-old child, and she had figured out that if she stole candy from a little store next to the school and then gave the candy out to all the other kids, that she had friends. Now, this is a very simple example. Mm-hmm. But how do you stop that behavior? Well, you could punish it. You can get angry at it. You can, you know, all kinds of things. And the solution actually was simply to give her what she was looking for, which was a certain amount of status in her peer group. So we actually encouraged her to become a mini teacher to some other children who were younger than her. And we set it up so that she was being brought down to a junior kindergarten in the same school. She was all of a grade one. And she was asked to do something where she had responsibilities for other children. And it changed her status. The way other children saw her, it gave her a sense of self-esteem. It also changed her peer relationships, and it attached her to the school, gave her a sense of belonging and importance. Then we also worked on the family relationships and everything else. But my point is, we changed the environment that gave her everything she needed so she didn't have to be bad and steal candy. Mm-hmm. She could actually find a way of having the same status and getting attention from other people in a more socially desirable way. That for me is just a small example of how we create resilience in a child while she was living in still a very chaotic and potentially dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just gonna get back to the theme again afterwards. Karin Kirsch, die hat heute nur eine Ouvertüre am Anfang von der Konferenz. Woche. Die können das vielleicht auch noch so, wo das Ganze sich aufspielt.
Ja, die ganze Konferenzwoche spielt sich an der Abbaye Neumünster auf. Und fängt heute Abend an mit einem Auftaktabend, wo wir Dr. Manfred Spitzer haben für einen Vortrag. Vier Drohnen, wie das den Auftaktabend ist, sind noch nach einer Reihe anderer Sachen geplant. Als Präsidentin wird da sein und auch ein paar wieder Sohn zu SOS Kanadorf und noch zu dieser Woche. Und dann haben wir auch noch den David Janni, den wird präsent sein, mit einer Premiere von einer Hymne, die heißt Childhood, und die hat hier extra für SOS Kanada für 50 Jahre komponiert. Das ist ein ganz flott Sache, weil das Projekt, den hier auch am Kanada zusammen mit der Kanada gemacht hat zum Teil, also hier wird natürlich Musik selber
Komponiert, geschrieben
und auch abgeholt. Er hat sich aber inspiriert und die Geschichte von der Kanna und dem Zusammensein mit der Kanna. Das war ein ganz, ganz flotter Moment, den wir da mit ihm hatten. Das ist ein ganz lieber Mensch, der noch wirklich einen super flotten Kontakt mit der Kanna hat. Und darauf freuen wir uns ganz besonders.
Spielt er den Abend noch live?
Ja, er wird das heute Abend noch live spielen.
Wir haben die Hymne noch nicht viel leihen.
Nee, dann haben das
Premiere. Weil es dann eine engere Feierung ist in dem Sinn. Wir lauschen aber ein Stück Musik von David Janni, schon durch den Titel rausgesucht, Rise, und du noch hören wir zurück, für noch ein bisschen über Traumapädagogik zu schwätzen. Musik. den David Janni Humahere mit The Rise, den David Janni wird Haut den Hof und dann noch Tim, die ihn extra komponiert hat für 50 Jahre Kanner dürfe präsentieren. Karin Kirsch, kurz, immer noch ein bisschen auf das Thema von der Resilienz zurückkommen. Heute Abend, du hast schon alle Invitationen raus und alles zu, also kann ja. Ich nämlich spontan lernen kommen?
Nee, leider nicht. Heute Abend ist wirklich schon länger Zeit komplett ausgebucht. Und für den Rest von der Woche, du lässt dich noch etwas machen auf der Ränge oder anderen Platz. Also wenn du ihn sich inspiriert, viel der Lust hat, der Michael Unger lauschen zu kommen oder auch auf einen von den anderen, die ich dann kann auf www.traumapädagogik.lu gehen und sich über dem Weg anschreiben oder auch vielleicht mehr einfach, wie das ganz kurzfristig ist, den Telefon an der Grappolen anrufen.
Das geht auch noch. Die guten Telefon funktioniert. Darum besten an so Fälle. Michael Unger, you're gonna start your day tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning and gonna speak about resilience and have the workshops afterwards in the afternoon. You've been talking about overprotective parents or overprotective people that care about children. Is that a phenomenon that you meet more these last years than before? And does it have to do about how society works these days? Because both of the parents go on. I don't know how you see it in Canada, for example, but most of the parents have to be working both.
Yes, it's an interesting one. Of all over the world, wherever you have more, it seems like more affluent families, more stable communities, smaller family sizes. We're seeing this pattern of which is kind of non-resilience, which is that we're actually taking away opportunities from our children to develop the very capacities that they will need to cope. And I know certainly in Canada, the United States, we have seen a dramatic increase in anxiety disorders amongst children to the point of hospitalizations of these children. And this is a phenomenon that's happening where you're seeing more and more anxious children unable to cope. Now, these are not necessarily abused children. These are children coming out of relatively safe households where anxiety disorders are spiking. And there's a variety of theories about that. But part of it seems to be that, you know, our institutions and our families, it's odd. We know that children who have been exposed to challenges and being able to fix their own mistakes and not overly burdened as in abusive families, but just the sort of normal raising of children, they seem to grow up better. And yet our society, and certainly in Canada, we're taking away those opportunities. Something bad goes on at school, the parent goes in to fix the problem as opposed to saying the child, go talk to your teacher.
Why do we do that?
Well, I'm beginning to understand that it's about the family's own insecurities, unfortunately, or parents who have a perception, partly through our media, that the world is a very dangerous and unpredictable place, which of course is actually not true. You know, statistically, we are, despite all the things that we think are going on in the world, we are still safer than ever before. And our communities are safer and our buses are safer and our governments are, the police forces and everything. It's all sort of there. But our perception is it's a very dangerous world. And we pass that anxiety on. In a sense, we model for children how to respond. It's kind of like what you want as a parent is to give your child enough exposure to danger and risk and adversity as a child. And I say that cautiously because I know where SOS, of course, works with abused children where there's been too much adversity, too many problems, too much trauma. But there's also getting it wrong in the sense of never giving your child a chance to, and I'm going to say the word, fail.
Yes.
You know, that the child never has that stress of having to fix their own problems. And that, in a sense, doesn't give them that inoculation against future stress. So the moment they get into a work situation or a situation at university or college and they are overstressed and there's no one there to fix the problem for them, they actually don't have the social skills or the coping capacities that many actually, ironically, abused children do have. We're not saying children should be abused to develop these skills, of course. That's not the point. But the point is that we need to find that a little bit of exposure to enough stress that a child can actually develop the normal skills that they need without, of course, getting to the point where it becomes abusive or neglectful. Mm-hmm. And that's partly our institutions, our schools, that children should, be in Canada, we've stopped letting children climb trees, throw snowballs, anything on the school grounds. There's even one school in Ontario where I live that will not let children do cartwheels. You know what a cartwheel? You know when a child does a head over, they flip their feet over their head and turn. and a cartwheel, just a, you know,
and they're not allowed
because then the child would be what's called inverted, where the head is below the feet. And that has become some silly lawyer came up with some law, a rule that would be dangerous. And I'm not making this up. We have gone crazy with these rules. And what we've misunderstood is that children need developmentally appropriate, age-appropriate challenges to develop the internal skills that will carry them through life. And when that doesn't happen, we see a spike in mental health problems.
Okay, now I understand why you wrote on your blog, do not let the lawyers define what our children should do.
And eat dirt is about probably another really good one.
Okay, so that's the blog that you're entertaining, if I can say so, Nurturing Resilience, and you're talking about very different topics on that blog.
Yeah, I'm a blogger with a magazine called Psychology Today. What I do is, as I travel, and I will probably write something about this experience here, but as I meet interesting people around the world and some ideas, I like to sort of reflect on those. And I was recently at a conference in Germany where they were talking about the idea of resilience also being connected to, this is going to sound weird, but our gut bacteria or our microbiome. What they're understanding now, that psychological processes are potentially linked to what sort of bacteria are in our stomachs and this type of thing. Now, that sounds a bit weird, but what the whole idea is that we are a complex human system, neurologically, physically, and they're trying to figure out all these interconnections. But what we do know is that you are, in a sense, not just physically healthier, but also emotionally healthier when you're exposed to normal bacteria and dirt. We're genetically designed to actually do that. And all this sanitizing wipes, you know, these people go to the grocery store and they take these sanitizing wipes and they wipe the grocery cart handles. I don't know if this is happening.
No, I didn't see that.
This is happening in North America. Okay. Don't let this happen in Luxembourg, please, you know.
Well, I'm not often going to the grocery store, but yeah.
Yeah, you sort of see this kind of almost excessive cleanliness. And now we're beginning to understand that maybe that is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, E. coli and you know, bad toxic water, that's not what we're talking about. But the normal run of wanting people to be exposed to bacteria and germs and stuff is probably overall healthy and may actually, this is for me what's freaky, this is interesting, is it may actually affect our psychological conditions as much as our physical health. And this is the kind of leading edge of resilience, including, by the way, genetics. We're beginning to understand that people's genome also changes their how they respond to stressors in their world. Indeed, even how they respond to intervention. So if you're going for a drug and alcohol treatment, there's now some evidence that genetically different people respond to treatments in different ways. Now, all of this adds up for me, because I can't change someone's genome. I can't change your genes. But of course, what we can do is we can change programs and interventions. We can make it so that people get the things they need from their schools, their environments, their families, the dirt around them, that they get what they need to actually be the best and most healthy person that they can be.
Okay, but there's some way to go.
Oh, where the science is emerging. It's like, stay tuned for more.
Okay. I thank you a lot for all the details and information, Dr. Michael Ungar. Vielmals merci, Karin Kirsch, für die ganz Details. Englisch, froh, naronisch, die viel verschiedenen Speaker schwätzen auf viel verschiedene Sprachen. Hat eine Übersetzung parat für die verschiedenen?
Ja, also der Michael Ungar, die versät simultan auf Französisch und auf Deutsch. An auch den Elad Neuenhaus, weil er noch auf Englisch wird schwätzen. Und dann die Konferenzien, die auf Französisch respektive auf Deutsch schwätzen, gehen dann immer in die anderen Sprache auch simultan übersät.
Okay. An all die Teile von denen auf der Internetseite traumapädagogik.lu. Vielen Dank für heute. Thank you a lot for being
merci.
Here.
Oh, wonderful. Children playing.
Terran Save the Children, ein Titel, den auch bei dem Thema gepasst hat von unserem Interview, den wir geführt haben mit Dr. Michael Ungar, den wird über Resilienz auch bei Kanner schwätzen. Und das mit dem von Ingerun am Neumünster im Kader von der Traumapädagogik.lu, der Konferenz, die organisiert ist von SOS Kannerdorf Lützebusch. Und direkt kommen wir zurück auf die Table Ronde, die heute um 100,7 gesendet.